Hello and welcome to 4th and 5, your Longhorn Nation podcast. I'm your host, Will Baser, and I'm joined alongside by Joe Cook. You guys are listening to the Hornscast channel. It's the Hornscast channel on iTunes, Google Play, Podbean. I'm missing something probably. Anyways, Texas just beat Iowa State to almost lock themselves into a Big 12 championship against either Oklahoma or West Virginia. Just they have to take on Kansas. So we're going to go ahead and break down what happened against Iowa State, what that means for the program going forward, whether or not we should take on West Virginia or Oklahoma, and taking on Kansas, what to look for. So, Joe, my man, do you have any thoughts on this Iowa State game? There's just too much to talk about. What's, like, on the top of your mind?
Man, this was the first game that everything seemed to go right. They win the turnover battle, or at least tied it, I believe. No, they won the turnover battle. That late fumble put it over for them. Even with Sam Ehlinger going down, played a clean game, very clean, 10 for 10 from Shane Buechel. Did everything right on defense against a really similar team to them. Maybe they kind of knew what was coming. At a point we can kind of get to later is that even David Montgomery returning to the game, fresh leg. They went to him a lot, and it didn't really seem to do much. So just an overall solid performance in pretty much every side of the football, maybe except for Cameron Dicker missing a field goal.
Yeah, that was maybe the most complete game that Texas has played against a team that matters.
Oh, for sure, for sure. And you know, not only did a team matter, we can go ahead and dive into this, is about, you know, the game mattered, especially in the context of the Big 12 conference. Before the game even started, they were playing the West Virginia Oklahoma State game on the Godzillatron, and you know, Tom Herman preaches 1-0, 1-0, 1-0, and he even talked about this in his post-game press conference, like, I'll have to talk to the video board operator to maybe not have that happen next year, because they showed Will Grier's attempted final, they showed the touchdown pass, they showed Oklahoma State's final touchdown with like a minute left, mm-hmm. And basically, you know, right as warm-ups were starting, the camera started going from, you know, that game into players warming up, showing them on the field, getting ready for the game. And you have to remember, before the game, whoever won this pretty much, I believe, controlled their own destiny at that point. So depending on if Oklahoma State beat West Virginia. So everybody on that field, all, you know, almost 200 football players on that field were very interested in the context of this game while they're getting ready to play their own game. They show the Oklahoma State defensive back stop Will Grier's final pass. The fans go pretty crazy. Brecken Hager goes crazy. I think he's the one that has his sights on the Big 12 title so much, despite what he may say about going 1-0 next week. He wants that hair cut. And so to see the opportunity in front of him that, you know, this is our chance to go 1-0 against Iowa State and to then beat Kansas and then play in the Big 12 title game after Oklahoma State beat West Virginia. I think that got the crowd that was in there energized. I think that was about, 25 minutes before the game started. Mm-hmm. So most of the people are in there at that point. They're then inside for senior day and all that. And, you know, it really was an interesting moment just to have that happen for both teams to see what was exactly on the line for that game and then to have it play out and Texas, you know, come out pretty much locked in from the beginning.
Yeah, the young prophet, man, he prophesized it. He said, we're going to the Big 12 championship. I'm getting my hair cut. So we'll see what the future WWE wrestler, what happens to his hair. But you're right, man. It was interesting to see that go on right before the game and to see Texas come out and almost play like it never happened. One of the big problems that happened against Oklahoma State, Tom Herman said, was that he brought in the big picture before that game and it rattled the players. The fact that there was that right in front of them, the big picture right in front of them, literally on the big picture in HD, and it didn't rattle them, probably a lot due to the crowd hyping them up, but also good on them for not having that distraction destroy them. But, I mean, you're right. The crowd was absolutely ridiculous. Like, that was... Joe, what do you think? What was a better crowd? That one, West Virginia 2012, Notre Dame 2016, USC earlier this year. What was a better crowd? What do you think?
I think... of all those, the best crowd might have been Notre Dame. I think the fact that it was a win gives it a little bit of boost, but that was, you know, even despite some, you know, back and forth big, I mean, that crowd was engaged the whole time with back and forth big plays, just over and over, just running up the score, constantly excited. USC was really good. It was a great crowd. Kept the team in the game when they were down, I think two possessions early. Got the team going back into the game. The big field goal block got them going. West Virginia was a pretty, for some reason, it was kind of an average crowd until they played Jump Around, which somehow caught fire during that game and got everybody going, and it was big time until then. But then, you know, the miscue on the snap by David Ash and the missed field goal, I think, by Nick Rose just really took the air out of that place. This game, I think not only was the crowd engaged the whole time, not necessarily like hyped up, but they were engaged. It was pretty packed. Maybe being on the Longhorn Network had to do with that. Maybe being Senior Day had to do with that. I think you saw some seniors on Twitter complain that, you know, they got turned away at the end there. Well, that's the problem. It's first come, first served for a reason. But I think definitely Notre Dame keeps it up there. But this was the point where I'll try to get to is the whole journey. Don't stop believing. Oh, yeah. in the lights.
What we started off the show with.
Right. In the camera, cell phone lights. Like, that was something that, you know, I saw they started playing it, and they've played it every game. That's the other thing. Like, it hadn't caught on like it did this game. And there are about, you know, I think like 20 people in front of the student section who started doing it. And, you know, enough other people started feeling interested in it that they got going, and it just spread to the whole stadium. And it was, you know, one of those, I saw somebody I follow on Twitter say this wasn't like created. This was an organic thing. Like they constantly play play the song all the time. And for some reason, the environment, the team winning and leading, what was at stake, everything going on, just made it into like one of the, you know, those moments in DKR that's pretty memorable. And it's, you right. know, with a very cliche song, but this was a great environment. And I think it really was kind of a summation, this game, of all the effort that Chris Del Conte, that Tom Herman, that everybody involved with game ops to improve the game day, just the experience. I think this game was a summation of all that effort that put in this year. And you know what? They were rewarded with a 5-1 home record, where the only loss was at, you know, by 1 point on the final play. That says a lot about, A, not only what the administration and staff has done, but B, just what Tom Herman has done in about defending the home turf. Some of those were a little bit closer, like, you know, the Tulsa game probably should not have gotten to where it was. Baylor got really close at the end. You know, that was another game that came down to the last play. West Virginia, they had a chance to win, but, you know, West Virginia made their comeback. But still, I mean, that's a lot of, you know, there's some good football games that went on at DKR, and they defended their home turf basically for every game save for about 2 minutes, when a Heisman candidate made a great play and an aggressive head coach made another aggressive decision that worked out with that Heisman candidate.
Yeah, and I think also what went into this crowd Saturday was the context of everything. The fact that Texas has been down since 2010. It's been 8 years since Texas has been nationally relevant. Texas has a chance to get back into the Big 12 championship. They just have to beat a really good Iowa State team that's in their house. And the fact that it looked, that journey song came on right after a huge, huge second and third down sacks on Brock Purdy. That was the one where I think he got hurt. And after that, it looked like Texas is going to win. They played that song. Everybody was hype. And that was the first time that Texas is going to the back to the Big 12 championship since 2009. The first time they've sniffed it since Mac Brown left. And it just felt like, hey, it's time to party, because we're back in this. We're back in the national picture with everything that's going on in this program. We're finally here. We're basically have Kansas in our way of a Big 12 championship. That's what the crowd is saying. And that's why it got so alive in there. I mean, that wasn't just the only thing that happened. That journey song, after that, people were in the middle of the play doing the using their flashlights, flickering it on and off. It looked like a bunch of stars. On my Twitter, I have it as the stars are bright. I have it on my Twitter as the stars are something under Texas or something like that. And they're pushing the buttons. It's flashing all on and off, on and off. And then there was another a cappella. Was it another Journey song? I don't remember.
No, it was Living on a Prayer.
Living on a Prayer. So it was a hype crowd. The students were in it. Yeah, exactly right. Christo Conte, he's done something that, honestly, I got into this to complain about, was the game day atmospheres at Texas were atrocious under DeLoss Dodds, especially under Steve Patterson. Mike Perrin got a little better, but there was obvious problems. Christo Conte has come in and basically almost fixed everything. Almost. There's few things that you can nitpick here and there, but the crowd has been crazy, crazy good. But
I do miss Jetpack Guy, though.
Oh, I do miss the Taco Bell bong. I do.
That was awesome. That's a staple of my memory going to games.
Dude, it's nostalgia. It is nostalgia. Like, I know it's an ad. It just reminds me of going to the games. But let's go ahead and get into the game a little bit more here and talk about this offense, because this is the best defense Texas has faced this year. We talked about that on our last show, that Iowa State was legitimately the best team Texas was going to face on the defensive side of the ball. It didn't really look like that against Sam Ehlinger, and there were a few reasons why. Tom Herman, well, the players really outmanned Iowa State up and down the field, especially in the run game. Guys like Samuel Cosmi and Calvin Anderson were absolutely destroying guys on down blocks or on the pulling blocks. And the GT counters, something that I know I saw in your GIF recap, my GIF recap, I have it as well. But GT counters to the weak side. I talked about it on the last show where you had to get to the weak side to take advantage of the cornerback over there. And Texas did that and got the run that got Sam Ehlinger inside of the five to get their first touchdown, and the 20-yard run from Keontae Ingram. Those are two big runs in that game. Both came off of taking advantage of that weak side on the run game.
Right, and that's getting – not only is that getting two guys who are pretty adept at being mobile, that's one of Calvin Anderson and definitely Patrick Vahe's strong suits. They're good being mobile players on the move, pulling and stuff like that. The touchdown run from Ehlinger, the thing that was interesting about me was that was an empty set. You don't see that very often in the way, you know, the personnel also kind of dictated what type of defense Iowa State was going to run. They brought Malcolm Epps in there, who as soon as you see him, it's like, okay, jump ball.
Right.
And so not only that, you split Trey Watson out wide simply just to occupy a defender. But then you have, you know, two wide receivers remaining, right?
Math.
Whatever. Basically, what happened, regardless what happened, Little Jordan Humphrey was the inside receiver, and they double covered him. The linebacker dropped back to take away the underneath stuff. I think either their nickel or safety was over the top, taking away, you know, whatever extended route he ran. So it was 5-on-5 in the box, and GT, they just pulled the tackle on this one occasion, right after that play you're talking about that set him up, the GT counter. You know, 5-on-5 is perfect for the offense.
Right.
The one linebacker got loose, but Ehlinger made him miss, as he's apt to do, and just waltz right in the end zone. So, you know, it's funny how whenever this offense is struggling, I'm like, wow, there's really not a whole lot of innovation here. It's just, you know, simple matchup football, being better than your guy. And then, you know, when it's really moving and pumping, it does that sometimes. But there's also some interesting wrinkles in there that is a little bit more than matchup football. It's designed to, you know, sway numbers one way or another and just run where the numbers aren't. And I think that's pretty good innovation. But it kind of, you know, it's very up and down with me. And I think it's up and down with some other people too.
Well, yeah, I mean, there is innovation there, or there's things to look for, like on the GT counter run we're talking about with Sam Ehlinger. There was a part of it where they pulled the cornerback out, the guy who's got the edge set. They pull him out by motioning out the running back that
right.
occupies him, so they could get all the way up to that middle safety and give Sam Ehlinger all that space to work with. And my God, the guy is so good. He's so slippery for a 6'3", 220-pound quarterback, right? It's incredible to see him follow blocks and do what he does. Beyond that, there's just little wrinkles here and there that the Texas staff did to really set up a lot of great plays. I mean, three of their touchdowns, all three of the touchdowns, were set up by context. And that was an issue I had coming out of the first game, was there was no contextual play calling, right? There was no identity. There was no, setting up another play with a play prior. But that happened in this game. The first touchdown we're talking about, yeah, Malcolm Epps is out there, jump ball. All right, they're looking for a pass. What happens? Texas pulls a guard, and Sam runs it in for a touchdown. And the play where Sam Ehlinger finds Keontae Ingram for that, what was it? How long of a pass was that for a touchdown? I don't even remember.
20, or right around 20 yards, I think.
Yeah, that play was set up by other crossing route plays before it, where they threw the ball to little Jordan Humphrey, they threw the ball to Colin Johnson, and it had the guys, the Iowa State team, who was man on one side, zone on the other, focused on them, left a huge space in front of them. And Sam Ehlinger put on incredible touch, had incredible recognition there. And then the last touchdown, the one to little Jordan Humphrey, set up by going into it. You bring in Daniel Young, it's 3rd and 2. All right, what do you think is going to happen, Joe?
Yeah, it's going to be, they accounted for 2 of the 3 most likely options.
Right.
Which was pretty interesting.
Yeah, the tight end going up or the guy going down the gut. And what does that do? That leaves you one-on-one with little Jordan Humphrey and Brian Peavy. And Brian Peavy, really, really good cornerback, right? But he's 5'9", 190, going up against 6'4", 220. In football, big man wins. So what happened? The big man won, and he broke the tackle, and little Jordan Humphrey did little Jordan Humphrey things. This offensive staff did a wonderful job of setting up plays just with context, and it worked out tremendously against this Iowa State defense.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, when your starting quarterback goes down and you have to bring in a guy with a little bit different style and you allow him to, you know, I forgot, what was his passing numbers that game? I know he was 10 for 10. I wasn't sure of the yardage. I think it was less than 100. But still, when you allow him to do that, come in, make the game available to where your backup quarterback can still succeed. That's just a great job by the offensive staff. And, you know, the other thing was that, you know, Keontae Ingram and Trey Watson had really good games as well. Trey Watson had that long run, but in addition, he's just getting the yardage that is, he's taking a little bit more than the yardage than what's blocked for him, and that's really opening up a lot of stuff. There's, I think, you know, just a handful, one or two sacks, and I don't think Texas was really playing from behind the sticks that often. I also don't think they were penalized very often, especially, you know, as Tom Herman's likes to say, there weren't very many aggressive penalties. I don't remember any holds or any pass interferences off the top of my head. They just played a really clean game overall and were able to, you know, keep things going in front of the sticks at a constant rate, and that really helps your offense a lot, especially when your backup quarterback's in.
Yeah, 2 of the 3 penalties I had were on special teams, and one was a block in the back, which was just stupid from Devontae Davis. I saw it, and I was like, why? And the other one saved the touchdown from Buchevsky. So there was that. Texas played a very, very clean game. And you're right. Yeah, Keontae Ingram and Trey Watson did a tremendous job, and Trey Watson getting that 39-yard run on that inside zone was tremendous. It was helped out that the Iowa State linebacker made an incorrect read, but that helped out because of the threat of Sam Ehlinger's legs. Texas did a tremendous job in setting up different plays with context, had Iowa State's defense on their heels once the punches started falling, and Texas was able to man up in their run game with just heavier body on body. Texas just ran it down their throats.
Yeah, it just made a lot of the things easier when they play that clean a game. The top defense didn't play like the top defense, and a lot of that had to do with how the offensive line played. And Texas just had their way. Maybe that's emotionally being charged up. Maybe that's a number of things, but that's what they've needed to do for a long time, and they did it at the best opportunity.
Yeah, and one thing on top of that was the passing game didn't have any negative plays. And the negative plays that there were they were about to have were turning to positive plays. One of the reasons the quarterbacks went 22 for 25 combined and two for 226 yards was the wide receivers. I guess it's more of just the game plan as well. When you know, there's one play I'm thinking of where Iowa State does what they usually do and they drop back seven. They bring three guys on blitzes and have one guy spying the quarterback. So there's nowhere to throw because they only have three wide receivers back there. But what the wide receivers have been taught to do is to find space, try to break the zone defense by sitting in a spot. And what happens, Sam Ehlinger runs out of the pocket. Devin Duvernay comes back and finds a soft spot in that zone, and it's a first down. It was little plays like that. It was just a six-yard pass or, you know, the outlet passes down to Keontae Ingram or Trey Watson. They both had seven passes for 48 yards combined. Those few plays, those small plays, got Texas good field possession on first down or second down and got them first downs in general. It was little things like that, and that is the reason Texas was able to beat Iowa State and do what teams like West Virginia weren't able to do.
Yeah, I think that about wraps it up. What do we got next?
The defense. And the defense has been sort of the whipping boy for
yes.
Longhorn fans over the past, what was it, five games? They've played the, in S&P Plus rankings, the first, fourth, seventh, and 18th ranked offenses of the nation and the 62nd in Baylor prior to this game. So, you know, maybe it was a little reactionary to start beating up on the defense, but they were ranked an average defense. So I guess that was correct. I mean, you know, Joe, you were correct on that one. What really helped out here was two things. Immediate pressure from this defensive line, which was helped out in large part because of simplifying the defense, and just great recognition from this coaching staff.
Yeah, exactly. I think one of the biggest changes was going to nickel a little bit because they matched up, you know, playing an offense very similar to what Texas runs. They knew that they would need that extra guy in the box helping out with the linebackers. I think they probably recognized that, you know, the 3-2 with 6 DBs wasn't as effective against the run as it was last year, and definitely wouldn't be against a team that tries to stress the inside run like Iowa State does. Adding Jeffrey McCulloch, and, you know, some plays early in the first half, you'll notice they were in a true 3-4 with both McCulloch and Osai in the game, which is really fun formation and, mm-hmm. you know, pretty cool to see Texas's best edge players out there at the same time. But one of the other things that they were able to do, and I know that it's a lot when I rewatch the game, is that they rarely bit on the pump fake. And that was, you know, Brock Purdy had been known for, you know, being able to do that effectively. You'll watch it. I mean, it's hard not to bite a touch on that. But you didn't see guys like, you know, break off defending the routes. They may take a step, but it was nothing that Purdy could take advantage of. I think, you know, they tried it on a screen very early in the game, and I couldn't tell if they were actually trying to run the screen because it was so poorly blocked that it might have been a pump fake and trying to open up something downfield. But you'll watch, he does that fake and nobody moves, and then that's when guys like Gary Johnson, Anthony Wheeler, Caden Stearns, and B.J. Foster came in. So they took away what a true freshman utilized very often in order to, you know, open up things a little bit for him, took that away, and took away some of the running game. Now, David Montgomery, you know, you thought maybe him being out would be a major factor. They made it a non-factor basically in the second half. The only reason he had that rushing touchdown at the end was because the punt team was bad and there was a face mask on Ryan Pruchevsky. That's why they got that excellent field position, and it was pretty easy to run it in from there with David Montgomery, but they weren't giving up. You know, there were a couple, like, what, one major Hakeem Butler pass, or one or two, and then, you know, two chunk runs, and that's it. Like, four chunk plays over the course of a game when you have 60 plays and everything else is kind of moving pretty slow, that's pretty darn good defense, especially when, you know, when there had previously been a lot of chunk plays in these past couple weeks.
Right, and it might have been the fact that this offense isn't as explosive as others, but Todd Orlando's staff, you know, credit to them for this game, because they actually really played the chess match correctly. You know, they matched play for play perfectly. There was parts in that game where Todd Orlando had to be restrained from running on the field because he knew exactly what Iowa State was going to run. There was one play I am thinking of where it was like first and 15. Iowa State starts lining up and Todd Orlando was just like yelling, trying to get the left side of the formation's attention. They get PJ Locke. PJ Locke gets over there and gets their attention. It's a sweep to Texas's left, and Texas was ready for it. It went for, I think, 1 yard because Kane Nwangu just got away a little bit. But it was plays like that, and it was over and over and over again throughout the game where Texas just knew what Iowa State was going to do because they had watched the tape. They had played. They play against it every day in practice, so they knew what was going to go on, and Texas was played fundamentally sound enough in those plays to make sure that nothing was broken out. So that, on top of the fact that they finally got some pressure, pass pressure, and it also helped in the run game, but what happened here was they finally were able to get some well-timed blitzes. You saw that throughout this game. It was the first time I've really seen it this year that I can remember, and maybe that's just, you know, recency bias, but this is the first time I've really seen Texas time the snap with their blitz.
It was fantastic.
It was really great. And what that does is it gets you five guys at the line of scrimmage immediately, or four guys, or however many you're blitzing, and you can bring it from anywhere. And that's, while it doesn't quite throw off the quarterback, it throws off the offensive line, and it causes miscommunications up front. And that allowed for Texas to have like three breakaways straight to the quarterback or straight to the running back. That's what happened, is Texas was finally able to get some pressure with those immediate runs. A lot of the help came from the nickel and making it so that the defensive line didn't have as many responsibilities, the linebackers didn't have as many responsibilities, and all they had was just one thing and go.
Yeah, it was a sight to see. I haven't seen Gary Johnson or Anthony Wheeler time up blitzes like that all season. It was extremely impressive, and it really just, you know, for as much as it's kind of Gary Johnson running into a guard, it still occupies them, still helps do their job and make the blitz a little bit more effective. But, you know, Gary Johnson's not the best, you know, in between the tackles blitzer, if we're going to be honest. But that's not necessarily what the point is. It's to open up some things from the backside. It's to open up, you know, maybe a stunt or somewhere else, make things difficult on the offensive line. But, you know, one of my main complaints over these past couple weeks has been Texas's blitzing from depth. You know, maybe not trying to disguise the blitz, but disguise it by not disguising it, if that makes sense. Just come and make it look like you're about to play coverage, but actually blitz. They didn't really do that much this week. And maybe it was a little bit more of an aggressive game plan in order to make sure that you could get your blitzes home. The ability to time the blitz as well as they did help. But, yeah, that was a huge boost to the defense this week because, you know, putting a freshman quarterback in those situations where he has to react very quickly to a blitz he didn't maybe set a protection for, it's really tough on that in that situation. So it really helped the defense a lot this week.
Yeah, and it gave them six tacks from six different players all across the field. Five quarterback hurries, nine tackles for losses. It was a tremendous game up front. They didn't abandon the delayed blitz. They still had a delayed blitz. It just wasn't the way to get to the quarterback. They had it. They used it in opportune times. And that's what I've been saying. I've been calling delayed blitz a cinnamon for a few shows now because it's, you have to use it at the right time in the right situation, the right amount. And Texas did that. They think they used it three, four times. One of them was on 3rd and 16. When you have time to have a more complicated blitz, and they didn't just delay blitz and just have a guy sit there and wait and then go. They had Gary Johnson waiting at the line, feigning that he is going to blitz from the right side. Then they slant that way and bring him all the way to the other side. That caused a miscommunication on the Iowa State offensive line. You had three Texas defenders on two Iowa State offensive linemen. And it was the one that caused the pick for Brock Purdy. He overthrew it because he had B.J. Foster in his face almost immediately. Or not almost immediately, but pretty fast.
The blitz in this game really, really made a difference. hopefully that's something that continues with this next week with what you think are, you know, some a team that you're able to beat. Maybe even might be a little bit easier of an opponent than Iowa State. Maybe something to play for, maybe not something to play for. You know, new coach, old coach, who knows? But a lot of the things that they did should be able to be carried over. Maybe Todd Orlando will see, you know, depending on if Brandon Jones comes back and is healthy, depending on, you know, if everybody else is healthy, depending on Josh Thompson, depending on even Jeff McCauley and Jeffrey Osai, who are healthy, who aren't banged up, but, you know, who you'd like to see out there. Maybe we'll see some more nickel here going forward from these teams that, you know, from Texas against these teams that's trying to spread the ball out, because they can get the pass rush going, I think, obviously, with four guys. Not to say that I'm not the big four-man front drum banger. I think it's very much dictated by personnel. They're still running three-down linemen and three-down personnel. It's just bringing that extra guy. A lot, oftentimes, it's B.J. Foster. This game, it was Jeffrey McCulloch. So we'll see if they try and keep that that personnel at the, around the line, the scrimmage, a little bit more this upcoming game.
Yeah, what the 3-4 does is it allows you to have multiple looks from multiple ways. You don't know where the blitz is coming from. You can bring a blitz from either side, and it doesn't have to be, you know this defensive end is coming, right? You can have four linebackers back there, and we have two good B linebackers, so if you can do that, it kind of works in your favor here. So it did against Iowa State. It certainly threw them for a lot of loops and caused a lot of miscommunications and not knowing where the blitz is coming from. It reminds me of the Predator movie where you know it's out there, you don't know where it's coming from. That's what that Texas defense was like, and I think a lot of it was helped out. Again, we talked about it, the nickel defense simplifying. The defensive coaches obviously talked about simplifying this defense for the defense. And one of the things I can think of is making sure that, hey, you know, play aggressive but not overly aggressive. And that was one thing I really saw with PJ Locke, with what you said earlier, which was they didn't bite on the pump fakes. There was a point in that game where I think it was one of the first passes, PJ Locke, they ran a route against PJ Locke that PJ Locke got burnt for against Oklahoma State, where they pump faked and PJ Locke bit. PJ Locke doesn't bite here. And Anthony Wheeler is able to pursue and get to the quarterback. And even beyond earlier in that play, you're looking at how Texas is attacking this offense. You have two linebackers back there. You have to simplify it for them this game because they've had trouble with the complexities of this defense. So what they basically did is gave them, okay, you have two options. There's two situations here. The running back comes out of the pocket, and if he comes into your area, he's yours, and the other guy takes the quarterback when he breaks the pocket, or you just wait for the quarterback to break the pocket. That was the two-option menu for this linebacking core, and it's like something clicked in their heads, and they're like, all right, super easy, we can do this. And you saw guys like Gary Johnson use their full speed and absolutely destroy Brock Purdy time after time.
Yeah, it was a well-called defensive game plan, and like I said, maybe a big factor is going against something very similar each week in practice. You kind of know what to call a little bit more. You know, styles make fights, and when you're familiar with it, you kind of know how to counteract it a little bit better. So I thought it was well called, and you know, like I said, hopefully we see that going forward. I don't know if they'll be able to time the blitz like they did. It's not like crowd's going to be a factor in Lawrence. I don't think there'll be more than 5 or more than 10,000 people there, which is sad. But we'll see if they can keep it going forward against a team that's a little bit more, I think, into air raid philosophies and pro spread philosophies, like Herman likes to say.
Before we get into Kansas, talk about the importance of this game. Because before this game, you know, we were saying, or I guess I was saying, was this is a program-defining game for Tom Herman here. If you win this game, you're on your way to 9 wins, possibly 10 wins on the season. If you lose, then it's a disappointing season. I saw a guy, Kirk Bowles, I know a lot of people don't like him, but I saw him give Tom Herman so far this season a B+, and I would agree. I think this is a B+ season for Tom Herman, which is a good grade. Like, don't get me wrong. It is a good season for Tom Herman, and it's a good season to build on, especially given the fact that, you know, the defense might take a step back next year. the offensive line will have some question marks. There are going to be some question marks on this team next year. While you don't have the question marks, taking advantage of games like Iowa State, you know, games that are hard, but you know you can win, that was imperative. And Texas did that. So as a program-defining game so far, yeah, that was great. It's starting. It's a great base for Texas. It's great for Texas right now to get to a point where they can have double-digit wins for the first time since 2009.
I'll make one point in that I don't think I was with you. I'm pretty sure I wasn't with you last week when, you know, we're like, it's a program-defining game. I don't think I was up there at that level calling it failure, calling it success, depending on this game. But what it definitely was, you know, how to keep the game, keep your goals within reach during the season. As Herman has repeated often, he said, our goal is to be in the contention for the Big 12 championship for the months of November and December. A loss would have, you know, cause them to fail that goal, and a win allows them to keep them in it. And so now their goals are still alive. I forgot what my exact wording was, and maybe I'm being a little bit lenient on myself and what I said, but the fact of the matter is they won. Their goals are still within reach. They're still 100% in the conversation in the months of November and December, and one more win puts them in the Big 12 title game. Now, I think it's worth noting, Tom Herman never said our goal is to win the Big 12 this year. Maybe he thinks he can do that, and it's going to be a tough task no matter who they get if they beat Kansas. If he continues this, he will have achieved his publicly stated goal this year. And you know, maybe the goals change next year. I wouldn't be surprised if he comes out and says our goal next year is to be in the Big 12 championship. He could probably say our goal is to, you know, continue to be in contention, but Texas thinks a little bit higher than contention, but this season I think it was the perfect spot for them to put their aspirations, and they're going to be right there.
Right, and why I was saying is this is program defining is, again, this is the best chance right now, at least in the foreseeable future, well, concretely, that you have at getting to this point where you have the chance to win a Big 12 championship. I don't know. Again, I'm not 100% confident right now without, you know, seeing some stuff first that Texas can get back to this next year, at least on the defensive side of the ball. And if Texas didn't win this game, then those goals Tom Herman had and those goals that the fan base had weren't going to be achieved. And that's, I mean, honestly, that probably would have pissed off the fan base quite a bit, you know, losing that game and losing a home game going, what was it, three for four after starting off 6-for-1. That would have not been a great end to the season, another not great end to the season, and it would have hurt the image that Tom Herman is trying to put out there. Now that they have won, the image is wonderful. Like, it Texas recruiting-wise is going wonderfully. You know, you're going to get donor dollars in here. Tom Herman has a wonderful image out there. I mean, Texas looks like one of the best teams you know, out there right now in the Big 12, because, I mean, honestly, they are. They look like they have a shot to win the Big 12 championship. They, perception-wise, this game was so important for Texas, and the fact that they won it and won it convincingly is huge for the program going forward.
Yeah.
So let's go ahead and get into, well, real fast, before we get into that. So now that Texas has a shot to getting the Big 12 championship, Joe, they are either facing, if they beat Kansas, which we'll get into, West Virginia or Oklahoma, a rematch of either one. Joe, your choice, who does Texas face?
Ooh. Well, here's the thing. These are two similar high-powered offenses. The over-under of 81 is going to get hit, if that's what it is. Haven't looked at it. But both teams are going to score a lot of points. There's the emotional factor of playing a team like Oklahoma again. I don't know if Lincoln Riley apparently brought some stuff out for the Texas game that he hadn't brought out all year. I think Texas may have done the same. I'm not exactly sure what you want. I mean, here's the thing. You can look at it this way. With Oklahoma, you were right there. You had a good lead for most of the game, but their explosive offense allowed them to get right back into it, and some offensive miscues, but their explosive offense allowed them to get right back into it within the span of about 5 minutes. With West Virginia, you were able to score 41 on them, but you couldn't stop, you know, you had a hard time stopping them too. I don't know who you want to face here. I think they both present their problems. Winning a Big 12 title over OU would, you know, probably be the more emotionally satisfying result for fans. I think Texas is a good matchup with both, as we've seen. Like, that, you know, Texas was three points better than one this year and 1 point worse than the other this year. So it's basically a toss up for me. I think you just prepare for a high powered passing attack from both schools and get ready to attack, and hopefully maybe the not as good defense is the one that pulls it out somehow.
Right. The one thing that would make me pause in playing Oklahoma again is it's hard to beat a team twice in 1 year. It is really, really hard to beat a team twice in 1 year. Ask Alabama when they faced LSU. Ask any NFL team. It is hard to beat a team twice in 1 year, especially a team that is in a game that is as emotionally charged as one against Texas and Oklahoma. Now, the thing about Oklahoma is their defense, it's still nowhere near where it needs to be, and it's pretty, you know, it's pretty much what it was when Texas played them, and that's what they were hoping would get fixed, and it did not. They got 40 hung on them by Kansas. In West Virginia, the opposite side. It is hard to beat a team twice in 1 year. Same thing goes for West Virginia. If I had my pick for Texas, I would play West Virginia again. You have the emotional side for Texas here over West Virginia, and that you want revenge. I mean, you want to be the one that wants revenge in this game, and also the fact that you've seen what West Virginia can do. Oklahoma, I still think it's difficult to contain Kyler Murray, and I think Oklahoma might figure out something towards the end of this game. Or at least going into it. West Virginia, I think they showed what they're going to show. So I would err on going with West Virginia here, because honestly, I think Texas matches up better here with a pocket passing quarterback like Will Greer. Going to a nickel here would be great. Also, I mean, David Sills on Chris Boyd. Chris Boyd matches up well there. Like, I think that is where Texas' best chances lie, is with West Virginia beating Oklahoma. And, you know, just to be funny, you know, what did Ian Boyce say? It'd be funny to see Oklahoma fans scream into the ether that they would have beat Texas in the Big 12 championship, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, you had your opportunity earlier in the year, and you had your opportunity against West Virginia if that's what happens.
Basically, I don't want to give Oklahoma any chance of revenge here.
No, I think that's true, but, I mean, if you can, I'll go against my point. Take the emotions out of it. That's an awful defense, and it's still awful. And you know, Kansas, I know they're much improved, but, you know, at some point you also have to think they're still Kansas, and they have one main star player. But that main star player exposed a lot of the tackling issues that Oklahoma has, just the effort issues. Like, I think you like your chances against Oklahoma with, you know, that defense. You have to defend the switch route, which for some reason Texas has a problem with Oklahoma, and B, just be wary of Kyler Murray. And, you know, that's, everybody's tried to say that this year, and they've come up a little short. But I think, you know, if you remove the emotions intentional. If you remove the emotions from it, I think Texas matches up a little bit better with Oklahoma.
Yeah, you know, it's a difficult game to really know which one you want, but
we're looking ahead.
We're looking way ahead here. And side note, I don't want to play Oklahoma in Jerry World because I don't want it to be a dry run, and I don't want it to actually happen or have any ideas of it actually happening. But let's go to Kansas, because that's what's in Texas's way of going and facing either Oklahoma or West Virginia. And this is the first time Texas has faced Kansas in Kansas since, you know. So what exactly is Texas facing here? I don't, you know, I've looked at the stats. I've watched the tape. It's hard to say that this Kansas team is really a threat. There's one guy on this Kansas team who scares me on the offensive side, and that's Puka Williams, the true freshman. is really, really, really good. He's Kansas's like first 1,000-yard rusher in who knows how long. The dude is legitimately good. He's legitimately good, and the Kansas's offensive line is barely good enough to get him the holes that he needs. So that is where I would be, you know, worried. So I think Texas, what you have to do there is just, you have to stop Puka Williams. If you can stop Puka Williams, sure tackling there, then you're good.
Yeah, I don't think, A, you're going to have to run the ball 50 times with one dude. What I'm thinking this week is that every player has asked, like, how what's the difference between this team and the last team that went there? And they said a world of difference. So, you know, this is a completely different team. The program's come so far away. Then it's like, what are y'all going to do, you know, with Kansas and an opportunity at Big 12 on the line? Then there's no difference. We're focused on Kansas. We're looking at Kansas. Nothing's changed. We're just focused on the team in front of us instead of anything else. So I'm liking that at this point. I like hearing those types of things because it shows that, yeah, they really, you know, they know what's on the line. It's going to be impossible for them to ignore the fact that they can go to Arlington with this win. But at the same time, they're going to keep their focus on Kansas. I don't think they're going to look over it like a lot of people expect. I really don't, because they don't want to ruin this opportunity. These seniors have never had this opportunity and don't want to, you know, the thing that got them into this situation with Tom Herman, I don't think they're going to let that happen again. I think there's just too much on the line for them to overlook Kansas at all. And I think that Texas can game plan against Kansas. This is a team that, you know, if you look at their only conference win this year, which is a win against TCU. It took a lot of TCU mistakes for that game to happen. It was a monumental failure on TCU's part, just to be honest, because I watched a lot of that game, and that was one of the ugliest football games ever that TCU kind of let slip at the end. They had a chance, but I believe couldn't get any conversions and turn the ball over late, if I remember correctly. That was a weekend I was at a wedding. But, you know, that's pretty much the only game aside from Oklahoma that they've been in and been, you know, that close with, if I remember correctly. So I know a lot of people have memories of 2 years ago, but I don't think that's really a concern. There's not systemic flaws on Texas's side like there were 2 years ago with a, you know, a struggling freshman quarterback and, you know, a running back that they forced into over service, I guess, or you know, ran into the ground until he had to fumble the ball on his 50th or 51st opportunity. It's just, although a lot of things look the same, this is still a very different situation. Texas recognizes that, not going to let anything get in the way of, you know, going, you know, 1-0 against Kansas and trying to get to the Big 12 championship.
And what you're going to see from KU, right, is still a David Beatty team, right? They're an air raid team that will come out and try to run the ball with, what is it, 12 personnel, where it has one running back, two tight ends. But the thing is they're not really good at passing the ball at all. Peyton Bender, their quarterback, is not really great. He doesn't have a great passing percentage. Their real threats in the passing game are Steve Sims, their leading wide receiver, and Puka Williams. Beyond that, there's not really much to fear as long as you can. I have 100% faith that Chris Boyd can take down Steve Sims here. Like he can lock that guy up and just puts Gary Johnson on Puka Williams' duty, and this should be solved. Kansas's offensive line shouldn't be good enough again to stop this Texas defensive line. It's just, there's not many, like you said, there's not many situations here where I can see Kansas beating Texas, even though they got, what was it, 252 yards or something like that, 350 yards against Oklahoma. I think that's just Oklahoma's defense. Like, that is it. Like, that is what it is against other teams. I can check Puka Williams' thing. He's, before that, against Kansas State, 59 yards. Iowa State, 58. TCU, 33. Texas Tech, 81. Oklahoma State, 97. West Virginia, 65. It's not like he's absolutely blowing people's minds. Just Oklahoma's defense is what Breckenhager said. They're trash.
They have no defense.
They have no defense. So that's the only thing I can really see out of this Kansas teams on their offenses. If they're going to hurt Texas, it's through the run game, and it's going to be Puka Williams breaking free because Texas is missing tackles here and there. But I'm not seeing that. I don't expect that. Now, on the other side, Joe, what should we expect from this Kansas defense?
Their best player is Joel Dineen. He can tackle, and he can tackle well. He's an experienced middle linebacker. He's been in this conference a few years. He's been to Big 12. I remember he's a familiar face at Big 12 Media Days. But I think last year they had that stud defensive end. I don't think they have him this year. I'm pretty sure he's in the NFL now. You know, if Kansas has good players, you
Daniel
hear about
Weiss.
Them. It might have been him.
Yeah, like I said, Daniel Weiss.
If Kansas has good players, you hear about them, and all everybody's really heard about is Puka Williams this year, just because it's so hard to stick out there. If they do anything above average, it becomes a minor storyline. Like, Kansas is bad, but hey, this guy's, you know, looking at pretty good to NFL scouts. There's really none of that this year. So I think Texas should be able to, if they could do that to Iowa State, if they could do that to, you know, a team like USC who may be flawed but has some talent on the defensive line and, you know, on guys who are on the line of scrimmage, they should be able to do this to Kansas pretty easily.
Yeah, I think the only threats, right, are probably Daniel Weiss and Joe Dineen. The defensive tackle, Daniel Weiss, that's the guy who you're talking about, the Dallas native, the guy who is probably the best defensive tackle Kansas has seen since 2009, 2008, I don't know. He's the only guy who really gets anything going up front. I think Texas's offensive line can take care of him pretty easily. Vahe and Elijah Rodriguez, Zach Shackelford, if they can take care of Lima for Iowa State, they should be able to take care of Daniel Weiss, who is just not having a great year. And like you said, Joe Dineen, what is it? Let me count real fast. 133 tackles this year. He's the only guy who Kansas has on that defense. beyond that, Kansas's defense is just absolutely ranked the 103rd defense in the nation. They're not like, which is good for Kansas, right? But beyond that, Kansas's defense is not very good. I mean, they're good at stopping explosive plays. That's about it. They're good on making sure you're going from third and long, but they're not good at stopping third and long. It's just like their best parts of their games are average for other teams.
Yeah, yeah. And that's the challenge that Les Miles has in front of him.
Mm-hmm. You know, I know you never want to say, you know, you're just going to go out and beat Kansas, especially since the last time we did that, the Texas lost. But again, it's hard to see whether Sam or Shane starts Texas losing in Lawrence. Like, it's just difficult to even find a way besides Texas just fumbling, just tripping over themselves. Or, you know, everybody getting the stomach flu before the game for a way that Texas loses. Those are the only ways. And, you know, you can't really stop that, right? It's like Andrew Jones getting cancer. It's like, okay, well, what are you going to do?
Yeah, this shouldn't be difficult. And I don't think we've really said that about any other game this year, about
Tulsa.
Tulsa was the one where the team led up at the end. Even Maryland were like, we don't know what this offense is going to be like. Texas should win. But at the same time, like, this is a unique offense that we still don't know what's going on with and could put up some points on Texas. And then, you know, Texas just forgets to come out of the gate, has bad lapses, and that unique offense tears them apart. You know, I think the fact that we have no explanation isn't trying to be like arrogance from us as people covering the team, but just kind of like there's really no reason. And I think it would come as a shock to everybody if Texas lost this game. And I think it should come as a shock to us. And I don't think that's anything extravagant.
The memes would be
major,
unbearable. but yeah, I think the way you beat Kansas here is you stop Puka Williams, you shut down Smalls, you get there. You basically have to shut down their bubble screens And I think you're good on this offensive front. And I think Texas is very good at stopping the bubble screen. They are very good at stopping the run. So I'm not in the least bit worried there. On the offensive side of the ball, if they can get the running game going here, I think if all they have to do is double the guys who need to be doubled, and they're good. It doesn't take a crazy game plan to come and beat Kansas. Like, I think Texas can throw it to little Jordan Humphrey. He'll get a touchdown for sure. These Kansas defensive backs aren't huge dudes. Getting one-on-one with a lot of these guys, it's not going to be hard to do. And even then, I mean, like, John Burt will have, if he gets one-on-one, like, that's a mismatch. That's where this Kansas defensive back core is. In the front seven for Kansas, if you can outman them to one side, then Texas wins. Like, that's it. So just figuring out ways to bring blockers in to one side, you're going to outman them. You're going to out-physical them, and Texas should win. The end.
Yeah.
So I think that will be it. Joe, before we get out of here, what are you looking forward to? What are you thankful for?
Oh, man. I am thankful for smoother waters this season. I think everybody is. At least, you know, job wise, because, you know, it's a lot easier to read people like, oh, you know, this could be one minor thing that we tweak in order to you know, make things a little bit better than fire this piece of garbage, you know.
Right.
That gets really old really fast. What else am I thankful for? I'm thankful for a lot of things.
Thankful to live in Texas.
Yes, that for sure. I'm thankful that my heavy coat comes out for maybe like 2 months. I'm thankful I get to do something as simple as write, which I think I'm pretty good at. But I'm thankful I get
I don't
to
know
do something. I'm thankful I get to do something like that for a living and have other people enjoy it and bring, you know, maybe 5 minutes of distraction from work and be a good distraction for people.
Right. And I'm thankful for Cherry Pie, and I'm thankful for everybody who's listening. Y'all are amazing. Thank you all for so much support throughout the years. It's been a wonderful ride so far, and hopefully it goes for a lot longer. But on that note, y'all, that has been your 4th and 5, your Longhorn Nation podcast. I have been your host, Will Baizer. You guys can find me on Twitter at WILLBAIZER or on texas.thefootballbrainiacs.com. My GIF recaps are coming out today and tomorrow, or no, today. So please go ahead and take a look at those. Joe Cook, my man, where can we find you?
Can find me on Twitter at josephcook89 and can find me on insidetexas.com.
Or you guys can find us and our other crazy podcasts on the Hornscast channel. It's the Hornscast channel on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, Twitter, Podbean, Facebook. Wherever you guys can find a podcast, you'll find the Hornscast. On that note, have a wonderful Thanksgiving, and we'll see y'all next week. Hook 'em.